The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Alan Harper. He's the Executive Vice President and Chief Hacker for a company called Tangible Security. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you, John.
Well, you know, this time of year, everyone's thinking about a different Harper in town. We're all thinking about Bryce Harper and hitting some bombs here to get us in the World Series. Alan, tell us about your background and how you wound up at Tangible Security. And how come you're not playing for the Nationals?
I can only wish. But I spent about 20 years in the Marine Corps, retired as a communications officer, and started a small company called Intunet Security. And last year, we were acquired by Tangible Security. And now I'm the Executive Vice President and Chief Hacker there.
So you really have a pretty wide experience. You came in as an enlisted man and worked your way up. Got a degree here, got a degree there, made some mistakes, figured it out, learned this, learned that, made mistakes, figured it out. And you've got almost the ideal background for a guest on my show, don't you? Federal IT implementation from the ground up. I mean, you've seen everything.
That's right, including combat.
You know, before the show, I turned to you and said, hey, Alan, do you know about this Black Hat conference? And you responded.
Yeah, I used to be a Black Hat instructor for many years. I've also spoken at Black Hat.
Spoken at Black Hat and all these things. And from a humble kid who just joined the Marine Corps, as I mentioned, just a skinny 18-year-old kid, you went on to be a author of a book. I've got this book right in front of me. If we were on TV, you could see this book. It's called Gray Hat Hacking. It's the third edition, and there's a bunch of authors here. Alan Harper is the first one listed. So tell us about this book and the third edition. I mean, that's like the 18th round of a fight, isn't it? Not many people last that long. Tell us about the book.
Yeah, that's right. The book's about 15 years old now. And the purpose of the book was to provide a somewhat advanced book in the field. There were many other entry-level books at the time, and we decided that we were going to write something that was a little bit more challenging. We never dreamed that it would make it to the third edition. Actually, we have the fourth edition that we're working on right now. It should be out by the end of the year.
That's good. That's good. So you actually put stuff in writing and make a commitment. Well, that's interesting. That's kind of unusual in this day and age. I have a friend named Dr. Allison Druin. And 2 weeks ago, she teaches at University of Maryland, and she put on a hackathon. And it's kind of light and frivolous, la, 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 hackathon, and a bunch of guys in T-shirts and students, and they have fun. But I think, I used to be an English teacher and think about words and definitions, and hack used to have a certain implication, and that implication has kind of morphed over the years to it's light and silly and fun, just a hacker. But, you know, because I've seen a lot of things 10, 15 years ago, a hacker was a serious word. And now there's all these terms out there, and white hat and black hat and hacker and cracker. And you talk about gray hat hacking. And some listeners know all this stuff backwards and forwards. Maybe from your perspective, Alan, you could talk about what's the framework? What is a white hat? What's a black hat?
Yeah, you're right, John. The term has evolved over the years. And I think first it's important to say that we owe a lot of our history in the security field to hackers. I mean, good hackers, people like Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak, out of the garage of their house, built Apple computers. Those guys were truly hackers. But the term has evolved, and nowadays we think of it in terms of three terms. There are three types of hackers. We have black hat hackers, we have white hat hackers, and gray hat hackers. And I think the easiest way to describe them is really, it comes down to their intent. So, for example, the black hat hackers, those are mostly interested in attacking. The white hat hackers, on the other hand, they're mostly interested in defending networks. And the gray hat hackers, which is what I categorize myself as in our group, is a set of ethical hackers that kind of exist in the middle. We use offensive techniques for defensive purposes.
Huh, that's interesting. So what exactly is a script kiddie?
Well, script kiddie is a derogatory term that those in the security field use for people that are maybe new to the field and don't really understand the impact of tools and the damage that they could cause. They use other people's tools, and often for not so good reasons.
So the implications and connotation of the word hacker has morphed over the years to be almost lightweight kind of a term, but there's a new term called a cracker, huh? And so is this the new hacker? Is this the term that really has some kind of a implication of threat?
Well, I think what you see there is a desire for us true hackers to differentiate ourselves from people who are actually trying to do harm. So often I use the word attacker or adversary, but some people use the word cracker.
Good. Tangible Security, TANGIBLE, security.com is the company you work for. And kind of lucky that they grab you. Maybe that's why they bought their, maybe they're buying you instead of your company. They go, hey, let's take this brainiac and bring him into the company and brought you in here. So tell us about Tangible Security and what role it plays with my listeners, with the Govies.
Okay. Well, Tangible Security is a security service provider. We have a wide range of services, and we also have a wide range of clients, both on the federal side and the commercial side as well. I lead up the commercial practice, but we also have a government practice and several agencies that we support. In terms of the services we provide, there are many of them. We start out with cybersecurity assessments, by which we test and assess the security posture of networks. Then we move over to PCI assessments, payment card industry. We also provide security information event management services. We call that SIM. We also provide security operations and full lifecycle support of products, where we help clients bake the security in through all phases of the SDLC.
What's interesting is I think that the federal IT professionals who work for the, you know, the government that I know, if they deal with a company that is exclusively federal, I don't think they have as much confidence in them unless they also have experience out in the real world. It's like, oh, my karate instructor has got all his belts inside the studio here. They've never been on the street and not having trouble. And so I guess that's where the credibility of Tangible goes, is like, oh, you know, we can help federal people and we understand the rules. But, you know, in the real, we're in fights on the street in New York, and this is how they do it. This is how they do it in who knows what, in Sao Paulo or whatever town it is. And so Tangible works for both areas.
Yeah, that's right. And the mantra we have is government-grade security for all. And we think it works actually both ways, like you said. We bring our commercial experience into the government, but we certainly leverage our government experience out into the commercial space.
I went to an event this week, and it was an event on Agile Software, and they talked about continuous improvement. And this is part of Agile Software development. And you know, and I know, we all know exactly the words with Agile is, frequent iterations, continuous improvement. And this word continuous kind of slide over to the security folks. Maybe you guys stole it or something, but now we have continuous testing and monitoring. So this is a term I think that's been trending here in the last 2 or 3 years. Tell us how continuous works and what your company does with continuous testing and monitoring.
Well, in terms of continuous monitoring, I think that's what I call the third generation of security, and I hope we can touch on that in a moment. But in terms of just continuous testing, yes, I think it's true that companies that produce software should be testing it and actually baking that security in at each level of the SDLC. So be it design or requirements or implementation or testing or deployment, there are what we call security touch points, where you can actually impact security at each of those phases of the SDLC. It's very important that we stop producing code with vulnerabilities in it.
So I know your company does enterprise testing. It does vulnerability discovery, the network security. So is there a specialty within that for you? Do you something you're more comfortable with that you do all the time, or do you kind of oversee groups of people and teams that do these types of activities?
Yeah, I actually oversee all of the teams to provide all of those services. But my heart and my roots are in penetration testing.
And some people call that pen testing, which can be very exciting because vulnerabilities can be discovered. So the question is, how public do you make these vulnerabilities? That's an issue. That's part of a non-disclosure statement, I'm sure, that everyone signs before you do a pen test, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
And that's all we can say about that. That's great. Tell me about these three different generations or iterations of security.
Okay, well, we like to think in terms of our security has evolved over time. And we used to call our security perimeter security back in the 1990s. You know, right when the internet was first getting started, there was a lot of emphasis placed in perimeter security.
And hard on the outside, soft on the inside.
That's
right.
Yeah. And we put a lot of money into firewalls, and firewalls were effective for a while. But then we found that the bad guys kept getting in. So lo and behold, we invented a new term, which I call the second generation of security. and we called that defense in depth. And the Department of Defense started that, and the rest of the world has followed suit. And we started building layers of security. And again, an attempt to catch the bad guys, but they kept getting in. Around 2010 or so, there was a FISMA regulation here in DC that mandated what we call continuous monitoring. And at that point, we saw pretty much the peak of the SIEM field, or the Security Information Event Management field. And that, the whole idea there is that you have to have all of your logs in one place. You have to be monitoring them 24/7. We call that continuous monitoring. But lo and behold, the bad guys keep getting in. So now we're embarking on what I like to call the fourth generation of security. And that is what we call a dynamic security, or adapting security. And the idea is that we know that they're going to get in, but the goal is to quickly identify them, contain them, and then eradicate them so we can get back to business.
Four big pillars of security. Let's take a break and come back and talk more about dynamic security. You are listening to Alan Harper, Executive Vice President and Chief Hacker for a company called Tangible Security, here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Alan Harper. He's the Executive Vice President and Chief Hacker of a company called TangibleSecurity.com. And this is a hacker in the positive sense of the word. Huh? It's not like Alan just got a 10 years in federal penitentiary. No, this guy was in Marines for 20 years. He's a straight arrow. I mean, this is a light, humorous sense of the word chief hacker, but he does serious work. And one serious part is another. I'll toss off a little silly phrase that is kind of funny. And you know, we grew up reading books about honeypots and Winnie the Pooh and all this stuff. And then 15, 20 years ago, I had to take these tests about security. And I took all these tests and I had to learn what a honeypot was, which is a way to attract bad guys. And it kind of went in odd fashion. And now it's coming back in. And so tell us about a honeypot and what you guys do with these honeypots. So from light and frivolous, no, this is serious business, huh?
Yeah. That's right. The notion of a honeypot started about 15 years ago. A guy named Lance Spitzner actually set a computer up in his bedroom and connected it to the internet. And within 30 seconds, the computer was hacked, and the rest is history. So that started this whole project of what we call honeypots. And the idea is to set up a fake system, or a bait system, if you will, that its sole purpose in life is to be hacked. So this system has no legitimate business purpose. In fact, anyone who touches it is at least suspicious, and at best, an actual attacker. And so what we do is we set these systems up, and then we instrument them so that we can watch them. And we know the moment that they're compromised or attacked and then exploited. And then we also can learn a great deal about the bad guy's behavior, and often learn what they're up to, the new tricks, which we call zero days.
So your company is Tangible Security, T-A-N-G-I-B-L-E, security.com. Strong federal presence, strong commercial presence. Before the break, we weren't talking about honeypots. We were talking about pillars or four classifications or generations of looking at security: perimeter, in-depth, continuous, and dynamic. And this concept of dynamic is something very fascinating. In my world of social media marketing, Google has dynamic ads. So if you type in Washington Redskins, they will present an ad to you. Here's a signed football or something. And so if you type in Michelin tires, they'll come up with, oh, here is Harper Tire. You can buy your tires on sale here. So it's very dynamic. And I'm wondering if this is just a function of the speed and flexibility of the systems today, or is this just people getting smarter? I guess with dynamic security, it's the same thing. It's maybe a combination of both.
Yeah, I think so. And it's the security field has recognized that we can no longer have static defenses. You know, the bad guys just keep getting in, and they keep moving past everything, all those layers that we put up. And so now it's really about being able to adapt on the fly and being able to capture the bad guy real time while he's in your network and learn a lot about what he's doing so that you can effectively remove him once and for all. And that's how actually honeypots do relate to that fourth generation. There's a technology that we like called TrapX that does just that. You can drop it into the network, and it works on a virtual sensor and allows you to catch the bad guy and kind of put him in a mousetrap, so to speak. And once that mousetrap is fired off, then you can act appropriately.
From my knowledge of hackers and hacking and crackers, part of the objective is to penetrate a system and then erase your footprints as you leave. And so how does a honeypot deal with something like that?
Well, that's a good purpose for a honeypot. In fact, keep in mind, like I said, that a honeypot does not exist for any purpose other than to be hacked. So all of the logs that are in the honeypot are streamed off real time. And we actually get a real-time representation of all of the files that were touched, all of the registry entries, all of the network connections that took place both in and out of the honeypot.
I deal with software developers day in and day out. And if you want to get a software developer mad, just tell them they have to review this log. I mean, they pick up the chair and throw it at you.
That's
and
right.
They go, it's the most tedious, boring. It's almost like proofreading a book, zeros and capital O's. It's just, it's aggravating. And that's why all the new people get through the testing and the logging. And so if you say, well, yeah, Tangible Security, we provide these logs for you. People go, well, so what? I mean, this is like stacks and stacks of numbers. So what do you do with these logs?
Well, you're right. It's hard to get excited about logs. And a lot of times it's like drinking from the fire hose.
Right.
And but there are some technologies, and one of those technologies is SIM, Security Information Event Management. And what a SIM device is, it's a security appliance that you point all of your other security devices to. It takes all of those logs and puts them into a common format and then correlates that data so that you can actually catch the bad guy real time. We're actually seeing an evolution of that field as well. What I like to call next generation SIM. And the idea is applying the concept of big data analytics to the SIM field, because the SIM field really is a big data problem. If you aren't careful, you'll get so much data that you can't really query it in real time or near real time.
Well, if you're continuously monitoring someone or maybe more than one site, you are going to get the fire hose of information, and then you're going to have all this information. And let me take 2 weeks and understand it, and then we'll close the door before the horsey gets away. Well, you don't have 2 weeks.
That's right. And that's all part of this dynamic security, this fourth generation that we're talking about. There's a company called RSA that we like in that space that actually has a good application of big data analytics to the SIM problem.
So TrapX is a company, a product, or what exactly is TrapX?
Yeah, TrapX is a company that provides this fourth generation type of honeypot. And
I would imagine that when you walk into organizations and talk to the CIO, he's really going to get it. He's going to know you, going to know your background, and trust you, and say, well, Jesus, guy wrote a book. I mean, you know. But if you go into the CEO's office, he's going to say, I want a dashboard like in my car. I want to know when I'm out of oil. I want to know when there's trouble. And when bad things happen, I want my guy, Ralph, or my girl, Corinne, to hit it quickly. And so it has to be, I mean, tangible assets, tangible security's got to be good, but you got to present that at the CEO level, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. And more and more we're seeing that the boards of companies and organizations of all types are starting to realize that security is really a board level issue. And if you doubt that, just take a look at the recent Target breach.
Right. It affects everyone on the board. That's true. So virtualization, I started doing interviews on virtualization about 7 years ago. And then we started talking about virtual storage. Wow, that's this. And then we said, well, now there's software-defined networks. And I talked about these mostly from the saving money. Well, you can save money by virtual. Oh, yes, you can. What about storage? Well, that's great. You can ramp up stuff. And what about networks? Well, I never thought of it, but you could control, you know, a switch software. That makes sense. From a security perspective, is this just a runaway screaming, or does this give you more flexibility, less flexibility? How does a security guy like you approach virtualization?
Well, I can say that hackers like virtual technology as well. They both use it in their own practice, and then they also like the fact that we as defenders are putting all of our eggs in one basket. And one of the things that we have to recognize is that although there's some good in consolidating our resources and putting all of that into a virtual infrastructure, what we're doing is, in a lot of ways, we're making it easier for the bad guys. Not only do we have to worry about the vulnerabilities that exist in the physical network, they still exist in that virtual network, but now there are some new ones added by the fact that we've consolidated all of those resources into one place.
I never thought of it from that perspective, that the hackers, the bad guys, like virtualization as well. In the Bible, it says the rain falls on the good and the bad. And so virtualization is there. The bad guy is going to use it. The good guy is going to use it. It's
right.
No matter how you're going to use it itself. If you look at a typical agency, I'll just make a stab. Okay, we got 10,000 fixed endpoints, 10,000 desktops. Okay, sitting out there doing work all day long. Now, a lot of those people may have a tablet. may have two smartphones. All of a sudden, gets a little math out there, and it goes, well, 10,000 times 3. So the threat landscape was 10,000 maybe 5 years ago. Now it's times 3, it's 30,000, same number of people. So same number of people, increased number of endpoints and attack vectors that can come in, and still one guy here, still Alan Harper, going, wait a minute, guys. My job has just tripled overnight.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why I mentioned a moment ago that SIEM is really a big data problem because, you know, for years, what we've done is we've collected all of that data and now we have to do something with it. And you also touch on another key point, and that is that, you know, users are being empowered now and sometimes encouraged to bring their own devices to work. We have this whole concept called BYOD, and there's actually an extension of that called BYOA, bring your own app. And we're seeing that users are actually provisioning applications in the network, cloud-based applications in many cases, and the IT managers are not even aware of it. It's definitely a challenge for both the IT side as well as the security side.
In the 1930s, they had radio shows of someone lurking in the darkness, but what lurks inside an app? What lurks inside some of this newer technology that people just bring in, and it seems innocuous, and it sure works and is innocuous, and then there's all kinds of troubles. And let's take a break, talk more about zero-day threats that maybe come in with apps, talk about this thing called APT, a persistent threat, and how it impacts my federal listeners. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Alan Harper, Executive Vice President and Chief Hacker at a company called Tangible Security. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Alan Harper. He's the Executive Vice President and Chief Hacker of a company called Tangible Security, T-A-N-G-I-B-L-E, tangiblesecurity.com. And Hacker, this is just in the light sense of the word, someone who knows in-depth security and does penetration testing. And he's an author. In fact, if you'd like to learn more, you can dial up this book, go to Amazon, and go to Gray Hat Hacking, an ethical hacker's handbook. And I like the ethics part of it. At Georgetown University, every class has to have an ethical component to it, and I like the subtitle of an ethical component to your book. Many of my listeners read blogs. I have a blog called Tech Tuesday Blog. Are there blogs that my listeners can read that maybe give them some better insight into penetration testing or some of these security implications of topics we've covered?
I spend most of my time when I'm looking for that kind of information on a Reddit channel, NetSec Reddit channel.
NETSEC as in Charlie.
That's right.
NetSec. Well, that's good. Reddit. This is a company in town. I think Alan Paler's got a blog. There's all kinds of security blogs out there. You can read security blogs for 8 hours a day. And we just like to, okay, now what would someone like you read? Oh, that's kind of interesting because I want to know the places not to waste my time and the right places to go. So what exactly is a zero-day threat, zero-day attack? From my background, I remember learning about virus signatures, and so I would update by the way, I remember getting updates on floppy disk to my antivirus signatures, and then before they had a chance to send me another floppy, there would be a zero-day attack. How's that for, like, Ben Franklin? So what is a zero-day attack today?
Well, a zero-day attack is the use of an unknown, non-public vulnerability to compromise the system. And so what does that mean? There are two types of vulnerabilities. There are public vulnerabilities and private vulnerabilities. Public, as you might imagine, have been disclosed, and the software manufacturer or vendor is aware of the issue, and there's a patch that exists for it. And there's often a signature for our signature-based systems in the security field to pick up that particular exploit. Now, a non-public vulnerability or a zero-day is whenever a black hat hacker does security research and they get their hands on a security vulnerability and they do not disclose it to the software manufacturer, and it poses a serious threat to us as a nation and as a security field in particular.
So does that follow the old school model of a malware that does not have a prevention to it, or that's thinking at 10 years old, I guess.
Well, it's a key problem that we have in our field right now. So there's a dirty little secret in our field that 95% of our technologies are signature-based. Now, what do I mean by that? Signature-based technologies look for a pattern that has been identified before by someone. There's at least been patient zero, a victim somewhere has identified a pattern. And we train our systems to say, hey, if you ever see this pattern, wake me up. Okay, that's a signature-based technology. And 95% of our technology, so I'm talking about intrusion detection systems, intrusion prevention systems, all the way up to SIM technologies are all normally signature-based technology. So we have, you know, multi-billion dollar industries based around signature-based technologies. The problem with that is that bad guys understand that, and they, by definition, are risk-averse. They don't want to get caught. So they don't use techniques that have signatures. They use these 0 days, and that's a significant blind spot that we have in our industry.
So let's say that John Gilroy owns a company in Chicago called Gilroy Security. Okay, and I'm working with a bank there, and I find this vulnerability. And so what obligation, ethical, back to your book, what ethical obligation do I have to share it with a security professional like you? Should I go to CERT and go, well, I've found a vulnerability, or do I just keep it to myself? Because I don't want people to know that the bank here, Chicago Bank, got hit. Ethical question, Alan.
Yeah, that's right. And we are talking about a matter of ethics. And really, that's what determines, in my mind, the differences between a gray hat and a black hat hacker. A black hat hacker would never disclose that vulnerability. They would want to use it for their own illegal purposes. A gray hat, an ethical hacker, on the other hand, would be eager to disclose that in order to get it resolved and make the world a safer place. We are right now in the process of disclosing many zero-day vulnerabilities to vendors.
And what role does CERT play in all this?
The CERT has a key role. The CERT is a coordinator and often acts as a go-between between security researchers and software vendors. And if you contact the CERT, they have a process by which you can give them the information, and they'll actually facilitate the communication, actually give it an identifying code, and then help you publicize that so that we can get it fixed.
So is this just like a Boy Scout USA, eat your vegetables, brush your teeth kind of advice, and professionals like you think CERT is just out there for the novices, or do the real professionals like you actually use CERT, or is it? You know, I'm trying to figure out where it ranks in the real world with folks like you.
Yeah, we certainly use CERT, and like I said, this is a very serious problem that we have right now. Most people don't understand that there are non-public vulnerabilities that are being exploited every day. I liken it to using an elevator key. A couple years ago, I was in a security conference, and we were on the top floor, and the manager needed my assistance to go down to the basement and get some tables. And so we got into the elevator, and the manager reached in his pocket, and he pulled out an elevator key and put it in. I didn't know what that was, and I asked him, I said, what is that? He said, watch this. He turned the key, and we went straight to the bottom past all of the floors that were waiting. And I said, well, that's pretty neat. And on the way back up, I asked him, I said, do they have a separate one of those keys for each one of the buildings? He said, oh, no. Here in New York, they have just a couple keys. As you can imagine, all of the fire departments can't carry around a ring of keys. And so the gears start turning in my head, and I said, so that's interesting. Do you use that key, you know, just when you're out on your personal business? He said, yeah, occasionally the wife and I will be late for an appointment or something, and I'll use the key. And it just floored
whoa,
me.
Whoa, red light, yeah, red light, yeah. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
So who knew that, A, there were these keys, and B, people were using them for their own purposes? I think 0 days are the same type of concept here. There are people who are using 0 days for their own purposes, and they have an elevator key right into our organizations, right past 95% of your security spend. And in a lot of ways, they're like the invisible man running around our network. This is why it's so important that you leverage honeypot technologies, which is really the opposite of signatures. It's sitting there with a known good behavior, and the minute someone touches it, then wake me up. That's the way a honeypot works, and it's really an effective way, one of the only effective ways that you can catch a 0 day in this fourth generation of network security.
Let me draw a parallel here. In Boston right now, there's a conference called Inbound. It talks about inbound marketing, where you create information, a site where people come to you, whether it's selling shoes or watches or tires. What you're doing here is instead of doing a penetration test, you're setting up a place for the bad guys to come, and then you're inbound. You're
That's
like
right.
inbound attracting them, and so you're doing vulnerability testing, but from a different perspective.
That's right. It's like putting mouse traps in your house. You know you have a mouse. You see the signs of the mouse, Perhaps you see, indicators that you have a mouse, but how do you catch that mouse? You put mouse traps up. Same thing is true with honeypots. You put mouse traps across your network, you catch the bad guys, those so-called invisible men that are running around with impunity past all of your other spend. And I can't overemphasize that enough. Too many of us have spent too much money on technology that has no effect on a zero-day threat.
From a security perspective, APT, Advanced Persistent Threat, what is it, and is there a specific country where they tend to originate from?
Well, advanced persistent threats are, by their very name, as it implies, they're sophisticated threats like we've never seen before. The attackers have evolved, and that's why our defenses have continued to evolve. You know, it used to be that the attackers were just satisfied to deny us of service. We called those DOS attacks. Or they, for a while, were just stealing identities and using spam and so forth for a good 10 years. But now they've learned to infiltrate into organizations, and they're highly involved in intellectual property theft and corporate espionage. In fact, I believe General Alexander was right in 2012 when he said that corporate espionage represents the greatest transfer of wealth in history. And a lot of that is coming out of this APT, or Advanced Persistent Threat. And the reason why we use the word persistent is because they're persistent. They often stay around in networks for years. It's sort of like playing whack-a-mole. You might think that you found one of them, and you kind of hit it over the head, knock it down, and you remove that system from the network. And next week, two more of them pop up. And then you knock those two down, and next week, four of them pop up. It's just like playing whack-a-mole in the network. That's what an APT threat is. It's a very serious problem that our organizations face today.
I imagine you address that in your book. And your book, again, is Gray Hat Hacking. You can get it at Amazon.com. We're going to take a break, come back, talk more about computer security. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we're speaking with Alan Harper, Executive Vice President and Chief Hacker at a company called Tangible Security. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Alan Harper. He's the Executive Vice President and Chief Hacker of a company called Tangible Security. This is hacker in the positive sense of the word. Actually, Alan wears a gray hat, and he wrote a book about hacking where he can help companies with penetration testing, vulnerability discovery, network security. He works for the federal government, for the commercial world. If you'd like to learn more, you can get his book on Amazon. It's called Gray Hat Hacking. And he lives in a place where there are a bunch of people with red hats. Is that right?
That's right.
North Carolina with all those red hats, the Linux folks down there. I'm a little active on Twitter. My handle is at Ray Gilray. Do you use Twitter for anything, or do you think that's just a nuisance?
Oh, we have a company account, and I have a private account, but it's pretty inactive.
You had a great story about the elevator pass just recently. Tell us more about, give us some guidelines for our listeners to keep up with some of this technology. I know you talked about the Reddit and collaboration tools. And I just don't know how to, there's a fire hose of information about security as well as a fire hose of data. So how do people filter it out, or do they read books like yours? Is that a good summary, or where do they start?
Yeah, I think, there's a number of good books out there that you can get started with. But also, like I said, I like Reddit because it kind of filters all the news for me. People vote on the stories, and they go to the top. And I know that if I pay attention to these top 10 or 20 stories, those are the things that I probably need to be aware of. Also, I'm a big fan of security conferences like Black Hat. There's a local one called ShmooCon that comes around in the early spring. And I would highly recommend those as a good way to get involved.
In the world of software development, these software developers I know, they know everything, master's degree in engineering, they're real smart, they got everything else. I would think that they would have to avail themselves of some of this knowledge before they go write all their impressive code. I mean, they can impress anyone in the world and be vulnerable. And they're not going to admit that. The ego there is huge.
Yeah. No, it's very true. And in fact, I would dare say that we would not even need a security field if it wasn't for bad code and bad design of code.
Whoa, that'd be a tough statement to make in some rooms.
but if you think about it, it's true. We spent all of this technology and, about 20 years now trying to stamp vulnerabilities out of our network. And it all comes back to bad code and bad design code. It's one of the reasons why we're heavily invested in the area of SDLC work. And we help companies that are producing software do it correctly.
and software-defined lifecycle. And, you know, a secure software development lifecycle should probably be preferred. I would think that that would be written as requirements for requisitions here. I would think that the lessons you have learned should be learned by software developers and maybe the acquisition people as well. Maybe that's the other side of the coin where they would let something pass through to them that may not have this piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think we're going to see a day here soon where just through the insurance companies and just through the court systems, we're going to see greater liabilities placed on software developers to produce clean code.
I've had many guests over the years, and people listen. They go, "Oh, geez, I wonder what kind of a phone that guy uses." I had Vince Cerf on there. I wonder what kind of phone he uses. You know, so I've come up with a scientific 10-question test, Alan. And you're a big security guy. These are going to be important questions to see, and people are going to go, that's interesting. He does that and doesn't do that. So I'm going to give you this scientific test and find out if you, in fact, are a card-carrying nerd. So I break into your house tonight. How many of these old-fashioned desktop computers do I find?
Well, you're not going to find any of the desktops, but we certainly have two iMacs and about three laptops.
That's the right answer. That's what I figured. And how many cell phones have you personally purchased in the last year?
Two.
Two? That's a good answer, too. Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
No.
Do you have a personal blog?
No.
Okay. What kind of smartphone do you have?
Well, I have a Samsung S5 Android.
Isn't that an interesting comment? And what's the most popular app used in the last 30 days?
Oh, well, in terms of apps, it's probably got to be Uber.
Good. And how many tablet devices do you have at home? You might have answered that earlier.
We have four.
Four. Wow. And are you active in any social networks?
LinkedIn, yes.
Okay. And when was your last status update on LinkedIn?
About a week ago.
Okay. And the last book you read, not your own book, but the last book you read, was it paper or electronic?
It was definitely on the Kindle, electronic, like a book called Beautiful Security.
Hmm. Really, huh? Who wrote that?
I'm not sure the author, but I know John Viega is involved in it. I think he helped pull the team together.
Huh. Beautiful Security, kind of a balance between the hardness and the softness of the art of it.
That's right.
So tell us more about your company and what my listeners can gain by visiting your website. Are there white papers there? More information on what you can do? TANGIBLE, tangiblesecurity.com.
Yeah, and like I said, we have a wide range of clients, both on the government and commercial space. We can help you in any area of software security or network security. I would recommend to your listeners that if they haven't had a security assessment in a long time, that they get one. We believe the industry best practices that you have a cybersecurity assessment or a penetration test, as some people call them, at least once a year. And we're actually seeing a trend where larger companies are starting to do it more than once a year. But you really need to get a handle on your security posture and get the ground truth from the adversary's point of view. And that's one of the advantages of going with a company like ours.
I have a 29-year-old daughter, and let's say she's working for a company or she's working for an agency. And she notices something that's a little, she would call it sketchy. That's the word she would use. A little sketchy, something unusual. And her boss says is going to say, no, it's fine. But she gets the little intuition that something's wrong. I mean, is there a way to maybe contact Tangible and go, well, listen, Alan, I got to, you know, I don't want, can I ask a question about this? And is there a way to contact? I mean, I think there's a lot of people out there that kind of scratch their head. And maybe that's the value of conferences. You can do it face to face.
Yes, absolutely, and we get that occasionally, and we can come out, and sometimes part of what we do is just educate people on what the threats are that they're facing, and how to best protect their assets.
Because a lot of time you're driving a car and you see something like that, it's kind of, you know, and then the mechanic will go, whoa, you should have done this or that. And I think the same is true with network operations. And sometimes you see something, it just doesn't quite add up. And you go, well, maybe I'm imagining this, but this is somewhere. Are there tools? Can someone do a self-assessment? Is that possible?
There are some tools out there that you can do a self-assessment, but there's nothing like a third-party assessment. And an objective adversarial view is really what you want. You want somebody to come in that has no biases or no agenda or, you know, no political insight into the company or organization. You just want the ground truth.
You know, yesterday I reviewed a 22-page white paper, and I went through it, and just that I know some of the terms ahead of time, I want to take this and place this in front of an English major who's never heard any of these terms and can tell me, no, John, this is stupid. This is what you, everyone, no one knows what that abbreviation means. I guess that's the value of having someone like Alan Harper come in and say, okay, I don't know anything about your agency. I don't want to know anything about it. Here's best practice, and this is what we know is currently happening. The other set of eyes is so valuable for writing and I guess for vulnerability discovery as well.
Yeah, that's right. And we can do a lot of that interpreting. As you said, as we've talked, it's a very fast-moving field. There's a lot of things to keep up with, and we certainly are abreast of all those issues. We don't expect our clients to be. Another thing I might recommend is a risk assessment. A risk assessment is quite simply an understanding of what your assets are, what your business processes are, and then take a look at the threats to those assets and business processes. Each organization has a different level of threat. For example, we represent some casinos in Las Vegas. They have a different threat than some of our other customers, perhaps on the government side. And then you take a look at the weaknesses that are in your assets. These are the areas that the threats can reach those assets. And then you take a look at the mitigating factors that you've put in place or that you need to put in place to get your risk down.
I have your book in my hands here, and in a purple color, it says third edition. So I guess they're working on the fourth edition. Is that coming up soon? When's it coming out?
That's right. As we speak, we're working on the fourth edition, and it should be out by the end of the year. They're projecting December, but if I were a betting man, I'd probably say January.
And available in Kindle as well, electronic format, I would hope, huh?
Absolutely.
Great. Well, it's crystal ball time here, Alan. When you look at the federal government and look at the problems they've had and some of the wins and successes they've had, and I remember 5 years ago, VA had a guy lost a notebook and lost all kinds of things. Have you heard that since? I haven't heard any problems out of the VA since that. So there have been some successes, and maybe not publicized as well. Well, what's going to happen here in the next 4 or 5 years? Tax is going to get much more serious, shutdown time, or what's going to happen?
Well, I think we're going to continue to see more of the same. It's certainly... You know, you're right. We don't hear much about it anymore, but the federal government and all of our clients, even on the commercial side, are attacked daily through advanced persistent threat and others. And, you know, one of the challenges that we have is that, for example, the NSA is charged with protecting .mil. And we know that DHS is charged with protecting .gov. But nobody's really protecting .com. I mean, sure, the FBI can help you a little bit, you know, if you're Target or your Home Depot, then they'll certainly help. But if you're not, then you're pretty much on your own. And I think the trend is that we're going to see more increased cyber espionage and intellectual property threat or theft on the commercial side. And I would submit that is actually a national defense issue. You know, we're talking about losing our competitive edge. It's kind of hard to compete with our country's companies if you don't have to do the R&D.
If they can steal from Boeing, all of a sudden they can have the technology that Boeing has.
That's right.
And then you're a couple yards behind in the race. Well, Alan, we're running out of time. I could ask more questions about your book. Maybe when your book comes out in the fall, we'll get you back in here. You can talk about what you added and why. And that's the important part. My listeners want to know, why did you add this section? And why did you not do this section? That's interesting. We haven't even talked about mobile and mobile security yet in this interview. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio is Alan Harper, Executive Vice President and Chief Hacker of a company called Tangible Security.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.